You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hello, world, and welcome to Tales from Hollywood Land, a veritable feast of movies, Broadway, showbiz stories, news and gossip with Julian Schlossberg, Arthur E. Friedman, and Stephen J. Rubin. Today, we talk all about great comedians. And now, here's Julian, Arthur, and Steve.
Hey, guys. I'm excited to talk about comedians because the world needs to laugh more than ever. And we should get a few chuckles today from the people we introduce. Right, Arthur?
Yes. To open, I would say that some years ago, I was sitting in the commissary at 20th Century Fox with some of the execs, studio execs, and another exec came to join us, and he said, "Hey, guys, listen to this. We've gone over the charts, and the last three comedies have hit. Comedy's back in." To which I said, "I didn't know comedy was ever out." Comedy is king. It's an old saying. There's been so many great comedians, like everything else in this world, there are the greatest of the great, or the elite of the elites. If I had to make been fortunate enough to know a lot of these guys and girls, if I had to make a list of the Mount Rushmore for me, having seen, been exposed to so many of them through the years, I would list Don Rickles, Buddy Hackett, Robin Williams, and Mel Brooks. Those would be my four Mount Rushmore. Now, that's all debatable. I would also qualify that with two others. One would be Red Buttons, speaking after dinner. No one ever funnier than that, than Red after dinner speaking. And Milton Berle at Stag Roasts. Milton Berle at Stag Roasts was unbelievable. They roasted Arnold Schwarzenegger at the Beverly Hilton Hotel. There must have been 1,000 guests out front. It was an afternoon lunch. And Milton said to Arnold Schwarzenegger, Arnold, you are to acting what Raymond Burr was to pole vaulting. But that's a clean thing. Right? The Stag Roast, of course, were filthy, but
well,
very
funny. You mentioned Arnold. It prompts a question for me because modern American comedy, I'm talking mostly the movies, but it extends in other areas. They take action stars and they turn them into comedians. I mean, when they cast Arnold Schwarzenegger opposite Danny DeVito in Twins, they turned Arnold Schwarzenegger into a very funny guy. And they've done that quite a bit. They took Vin Diesel, who we know all from those Fast and the Furious movies. They put him in a movie called The Pacifier, where he became like a nanny. They took Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, and they made him the Tooth Fairy. I mean, they take action stars and they make them into funny men. And I think that's been a little subgenre of movies today.
They also have funny moments in the James Bond movies. There's humor even in those movies. But right here, I'm referring to some great comedians. Venues for comedians range from nightclubs where they've come up, from concerts when they become stars. They'll play in the big Las Vegas showrooms or Lake Tahoe or Atlantic City or now a lot of these Indian casinos. Don Rickles, as an example, was working until he was almost 90 years old, sitting in a chair because he couldn't walk too well, but he was still hysterical. He had a different kind of a humor. So that's why he would be number one on my list. I never laughed so hard as I did when I saw Rickles so many times. Buddy Hackett unto himself. Well, there were two Buddy Hacketts. There was the Buddy Hackett who you saw in Herbie the Love Bug or The Music Man or Mad Mad World. And then there was the Buddy Hackett who worked blue. Midnight shows at the Sahara, which were always sold out. And he would just come out and do very, very blue humor. But it was hysterical. That made it work for him. Robin Williams is as funny as any person that ever lived. And he became a movie star with a lot of that stuff. But if you ever saw him on the Johnny Carson show, you're seeing a Robin Williams who was hysterical. Mel Brooks, just generally speaking, is as funny a man as you'd ever want to talk to or meet. This being the subject, we all have different tastes, of course.
By the way, Arthur, I think the other thing about Mel Brooks is he was a true comedy showman. He, you know, he took a concept and turned it into a franchise. Look what he did with The Producers. I mean, The Producers was a very funny movie that goes all the way back to the 1960s, but he turned it into a Broadway phenomenon as a stage show. I mean, my goodness, he milked that for all it could be milked for.
Well, anybody who's ever met a great comedian, they'll always say the same thing, and that is either a person is funny or they are not. And it's not the joke, it's the way they that you tell it. And it's just true. Red Buttons could tell jokes and you'd laugh like crazy. Somebody else could tell the same joke, it's not that funny. One of the worst things we all go through are having people who can't tell a joke tell a joke. So it's really in the way it's told. But I'm curious, so I'll go around the table here. Julian, who are some of your favorite comedians?
Well, Woody Allen, to me, despite all his troubles right now, it was probably in many cases the most brilliant comic person in the 20th century. Anybody who could write and direct movie after movie after movie is an extraordinary thing. All four of us know how hard it is to get one movie made. This man wrote and directed a movie a year, sometimes two in 18 months. Extraordinary. But you had to see him, as I did in The Bitter End. As a stand-up, he was brilliant. His records were terrific. And yes, he's had this trouble, and I've worked with him on all his plays and produced them, and he's just great to work with.
So you remember seeing him in Bananas in the screening room, Julian?
Jim Veldy, who you worked for and I knew, gave me a private screening because he had no idea, he said, what to do with this movie. But you're a young guy, said he. You can see how long ago that was. You're a young guy, and what do you think? And I put it in our prime theater, The Coronet. I loved Bananas.
But did you sit there in the screening room alone laughing a lot?
I did.
Hard to do that, but we did. I had it with the five people falling apart.
Just, I think the hardest I ever laughed in any comedy, anywhere, anytime, I went to a play, sat in the balcony, and saw a play called Enter Laughing, written by Carl Reiner, and a star of an unknown guy named Alan Arkin. And Alan Arkin has a scene. He's playing a kid as a delivery boy, and he gets caught up in this theater troupe, and he's rehearsing, and this is the first night he's going to perform, and he comes out, and he faces the audience, and he goes up. He doesn't know what to do, and I literally fell out of my seat laughing. The hardest I've ever laughed in my life was watching Alan Arkin, and then years later, I was happy to produce for him, and in two plays we did together, but The In-Laws is one of the funniest movies I've ever seen with Peter Falk and Alan Arkin, neither of whom you would call stand-up comics, but boy, was that funny.
So I thought Arkin was very funny in Russians Are Coming. Funny. He's funny.
That's true. So what you started to say, Arthur, and I know Mike and Steve would agree, comedy is very subjective. I mean, one man's meat is another man's poison. But I have a very simple theory about movies that are comic. Do I want to see it a second time? Even if I enjoyed it the first time, have I seen it enough, or do I have to see that movie again? And that's my barometer simply for movies. What about you, Steve? Where are you on this?
Well, I have done a lot of thinking about this subject, Julian, because being a comedy writer these days, and I'm out there trying to sell every day, I find that the state of comedy is in flux. It's there's a great divide. It sounds like similar to our country, but it seems that some people think things are funny and some people don't. I kind of scratched my head a little bit because Phoebe Waller-Bridge had a TV series a couple years ago called Fleabag, which was the fair-haired child of the TV season. Everybody was lauding it as the funniest thing of all time. And Phoebe Waller-Bridge has gone on to become a major actor. I mean, she just starred opposite Harrison Ford in the latest Indiana Jones movie. I didn't laugh once. I watched three episodes of her series. I sat there, why am I not getting this? The other night, I put on a movie called The Other Guys with Will Ferrell and Mark Wahlberg. And I laughed myself silly on that movie. It's another example of taking an action star like Mark Wahlberg does mostly action pictures, but turning him into a very funny guy. He kind of plays the straight. Well, actually, he doesn't play the straight man. Will Ferrell, and I think the reason this Will Ferrell movie works so well is Will Ferrell is playing the straight man, and he's never the straight man. He's an absolute goofball in most of his movies. And this movie, for the listeners who have never seen The Other Guys, do yourself a favor and go find this. It's all over the internet and all over the streaming channels. It's about a couple of cops in New York who are just never in the front row. I mean, they're kind of back in the... They're never given the right assignments. They're never given any plaudits. They're basically seconded, and they become heroes. And it's just very funny, very funny script.
I think I'm going to go back to great comedians, apart from movies, just great comedians. And if my first team, Mount Rushmore, are the Rickles, Hackett, Robin Williams, and Mel Brooks. The beginning of my second team would include Marty Short. Marty Short is hysterical. And speaking of movies with comedians, did you guys ever see a movie called The Big Picture?
With Kevin Bacon.
Kevin Bacon?
He played his agent.
Yes, and?
He's hysterical.
He was hysterical.
He's absolutely hysterical. Martin Short, everybody knows him from the TV series now, Only Murders in the Building with Steve Martin, but
yeah.
He's been in so many things. I was watching him in A Christmas Picture. He played Jack Frost opposite Tim Allen's Santa Claus. Yeah, he's comedy gold.
How about him in Father of the Bride?
How about him in Three Amigos?
Three Amigos. But how about him just being in a restaurant? I mean, doing nothing.
Yeah.
We were at a Sinatra concert at the Greek Theater. And in the intermission, it started with John Panette. It went to Shirley MacLaine, and then there was a big intermission, and we were invited backstage. So be it. And everybody was there. Barbara standing there talking to Gregory Peck, and not believing it's happening. And this is about 1992, thereabout. And Barbara had to go to the bathroom, my wife, and the bathroom happened to be filled. And she, well, what about you? Got to get out. So who's ever there? So, you know, and who comes out of the bathroom screaming is Marty Short. Barbara, go relieve yourself, for God's sake. I mean, it was just backstage, and he was funny. Marty Short is funny, a very funny guy. But the other great comedians of our time would be Richard Pryor. Richard Pryor was hysterical. Rodney Dangerfield's not around anymore. He'd be up on my Mount Rushmore in second team. Billy Crystal, who is really the last of the old school comedians, the old time greats. And Billy Crystal being very successful in movies. When Harry Met Sally, City Slickers, truly funny guy. But again, old school funny, you know, the real deal. There's so many great comedians who've been in movies. But if we talk about stand-up comedians, guys who basically work in the nightclubs or in today again in Vegas and concerts, who was ever really better in his own way than George Carlin? Let's talk about George Carlin.
Well, Mike has something to say about George Carlin because he mentioned him earlier.
Oh, yeah. George was always, to me, the thinking man's comedian in a lot of ways. And one of the things I loved about him was he kept on reinventing himself from, you know, the straight-laced comedian working a duo back in the early 60s all the way to becoming the counterculture icon that a lot of people know him as now. In the early 70s, he started doing the switch. And it was interesting to see. And then suddenly in like the mid 80s through the early 2000s, he became then almost like our conscience of society. And he was like, you know, the one who would go up there and talk about things that folks, everyday things, things with language, with words and society itself, and talk about it. And that's what was wonderful about Carlin and everything. He didn't have huge luck in the movies and such. He was in the movie Car Wash. I know he popped up in a couple of the Kevin Smith movies, like Dogma and also Jay and Silent Bob and also Jersey Girl. He played Ben Affleck's father in that movie. And it was just interesting to see how his career was evolving. And, you know, but for me, it's mostly his stand-up that I'm familiar with. And
his stand-up, he was alone. He was alone of his kind.
Well, wait. He was following in the tradition of Lenny Bruce and Mort Saul and Elaine May. He was not an original. He was great and he was original for his time. But this kind of comedy was going on from the 50s on, probably spawned by television.
But he took it to another level. He took it to another level. George Carlin was playing 3,000, 5,000 seats. Hmm? Lenny Bruce was never doing that, nor was anybody of that ilk. More
trivia about George Carlin, though, is a lot of people don't know this. He was the first host of Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just interesting things.
Ran into him one time at Papa Tanaka's fruit store on Montana Ave, around where you used to live, Julian. And yes. Steve, you should know that about 17th Street there, about. I said, George, why don't you do politics? I don't hear you really doing politics. And he says, it's too easy. I can't. It's too ridiculous.
Probably 20 years ago.
Yeah, but he loved to do religion. That's for sure. He got into that.
One of the guys we haven't mentioned, and I know you'll all agree, who was truly brilliant, was Jonathan Winters. Jonathan Winters was as great a comedian that ever was. And Robin Williams, that was his god. Robin Williams worshipped Jonathan Winters, and he was terrific. Early television, of course, we mentioned Milton Berle, and Arthur knew him very well, and we'll talk about him. But we also have to talk about Sid Caesar, because Sid Caesar was another comic genius who started in the mountains with Max Liebman, and then they put on your show of shows. You imagine a 90-minute weekly show, 90-minute live weekly show? Unbelievable. And they did it every week, 39 weeks.
He was a genius for sketch comedy, no question about it. And evidence of that is that the film you did, Julian, 10 from your show of shows, clear evidence, 10 of the best things that he did. But he was a genius. He was doing something, again, on that other level. Little guy named Eddie Murphy. Forget the movies. Just think about Eddie Murphy. You ever see him in person, guys?
I never did.
Eddie Murphy was fantastic. Out of the school of Richard Pryor, but maybe a different kind of a thing going. Eddie Murphy was hysterical. Did any of you here see Don Rickles in person?
Oh, I did many times in Las Vegas.
Oh, you understand.
Lounges. Not in the big rooms. He was starting in the lounges. And he was fantastic.
You understand that? So you get it.
Julie. Oh, yeah. I mean, and I agree with you. Yeah. I mean, I have a few more faces on Rushmore than you do, but yes.
Well, there can only be four on Rushmore. Then you go.
I know, but not my Rushmore.
Well, we all have our Rushmores. That's the thing.
I was working on a movie in Vegas for Disney called Honey, I Blew Up the Kid. Yeah. Which was the sequel to Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Rick Moranis. Yeah.
And the producers said, we need a guy to do a cameo. He's got to look up at the giant baby and have a reaction. So I looked up at the marquee and it said Don Rickles performing tonight. So I talked my way backstage representing Disney. And I tried to get Don Rickles to be the cameo. I got to meet him. He was very nice. He said, this is not the way to go through channel, Steve. You got to call my agent in L.A., blah, blah, blah. But it was my Rickles moment.
Well, did you ever see him on stage?
I think I saw him more on The Tonight Show.
He was hysterical on The Tonight Show. But Rickles was also a different person in person. Don Rickles was a sweetheart. And anybody who knew him would tell you that. If you ever saw him in a club or a concert, you would think that he was hysterically funny being vicious. but he was just not that way personally. He was a very nice guy, a very soft-spoken and all that.
Well, his timing was good, Arthur, because he couldn't do his act today in the woke world. He could not do it.
Well, debatable. He could do it on a sofa. He could do it on a show. Speaking of sofas and shows, Johnny Carson was great. Johnny Carson as a comedian was really very funny. His monologues
How would you describe his style of comedy? It sounds to me like he was very much a straight man type.
Yeah, but again, if you watch his monologues, comedy is all in the timing, Steve. The ability's got to be there. But it's timing. And Carson was a master of timing. Great to have. Yeah, you're right. He was more or less more of a straight. He was great to ask the questions and then, you know, bounce off of it. But he was really great at what he did. He was by far the best thing that ever happened in late night television.
I think someone really inspired by Sid Caesar would have to be Carol Burnett. Burnett brought that whole idea of sketch comedy to TV as well. And she's still with us and she looks terrific. I mean, how much programming has Carol Burnett brought to us over the years, and her team,
Tim Conway
and Harvey Korman.
That was a great show. It was a brilliant show. She was great. Carol Burnett was a huge star.
And one of the highlights of that show was the beginning with her talking to the audience. And you could see what kind of a lovely, kind human being she was. I knew her very well. She spent time with her in New York a lot. And she was everything you'd want her to be. Funny, kind, loving, just a real human being.
Who I saw at the very beginning in Boston at the Heinz Auditorium. It was just happening. He had come off that thing with the balloons. Was Steve Martin. Steve Martin, a five-star comedian who made it big in movies. See The Jerk. You don't have to go any further than that. But Steve Martin became a major star. But he started as a stand-up comedian, doing something different. He was, you know, I'm a wild and crazy guy. And then Carl Reiner got a hold of him. Carl Reiner, by the way, one of the funniest people that ever lived. I mean, Carl Reiner is somewhat of a genius, along with Mel Brooks. They did The 2,000-Year-Old Man and many other things. But Carl Reiner got a hold of him and directed him in The Jerk. I trust we all saw The Jerk.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Of course we did. I was on the set of The Jerk because at that time I was managing Jackie Mason, who had a role in it. So I spent a little time watching it being shot.
Was Jackie Mason in the original? In the first Jerk?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Really?
And when Jackie Mason was just being a normal person and not doing his act, what was Jackie Mason like?
Just a lot of fun. Just a lot of fun and very, his whole family were cantors and rabbis. They really were really unhappy with what he had decided to do. But he was naturally funny and he wrote his own material. You know, it's interesting that so many of the comics we all know relied on their writers, like the Bob Hopes and George Burns, whatever. But a guy like Mason just did his stuff and just wrote it himself.
Jackie Mason in person, in a nightclub, or in the Borscht Belt, was as funny as any comedian. He did his comedy. It took a role, and he got into a rhythm. And once you started laughing at his demeanor and the way he delivered his lines, you started just laughing. You couldn't stop. Jackie Mason was really hysterical in a club. Maybe on a sofa on one of those talk shows. Maybe. I'm not so sure. Nobody was better than Rickles doing that stuff.
But he was fantastic on Broadway, Arthur. He started at the Beverly Cannon in Steve Rubin's territory out there in L.A. on Cannon Drive. And then that show was successful and they brought it to Broadway. And he was huge on Broadway at the Golden Theater.
Nick Vanoff produced that show in the Beverly Hills Cannon and then on Broadway. And a very close extended family friend of ours was Dwight Hemian, the great, great TV director of specials. And Dwight invested in a Nick Vanoff show called Angels, or what was it, Julian? It won the Tony Award for Angels, not Angels in America, but it was a musical with no songs.
Oh no, it had
City
songs.
Of Angels.
City of Angels. Written by Larry Gelbart and directed by Michael Blakemore, one of the great theater directors who just died this week at 95.
Arthur, did you like the show?
Arthur, did you just say a musical with no songs?
It won a Tony Award for Best Musical, and there wasn't really a hit song in the whole show.
That's what he meant. It wasn't a hit, but there were plenty of songs.
Right, a lot of songs. Nick Vanoff and Dwight Hemian were the pair that produced and directed all the old Perry Como shows. And Dwight had also directed the original Tonight shows with Steve Allen and the four talking guys and all that stuff. So Dwight was really great at what he did, but he invested in City of Angels, and maybe he broke even. He then invested in Will Rogers, Never Met a Man He Didn't Like, which I think was also Nick Vanoff, if I'm not mistaken. But so he went to Nick, his really dear friend, and said, you know, Nick, you need any help on the Jackie Mason thing? Because he was doing a lot of business in the Beverly, on Cannon Drive. And Nick said, nah, but it's not a big production budget. In the meantime, it killed him. It went to New York and broke records.
Yeah, huge.
Talk about word of mouth. That show was great, great word of mouth. One of the greatest comedians that ever lived was Danny Kaye. Again, something different. He was artistic. He was, but in movies, he became a major movie star. Steve, do you know any favorite Danny Kaye films?
Oh, are you kidding? I mean, I probably watch The Court Jester at least once a year. It's one of the funniest spoofs ever.
Well, tell us about The Vessel with the Pestle.
And The Chalice with the Palace.
The pellet with the poison is in The Chalice with the Palace. The Vessel with the Pestle has the brew that is true.
There you go. And that's all Sylvia Fine, his wife, not Danny Kaye.
And, you know, here's a big question. And I think Court Jester should be a musical in some manner or form, like Yesterday. But who do you cast today to play Danny Kaye? I couldn't think of anybody. Martin Short.
That's okay. Who I would cast.
Yep. Okay, there you go.
Dana Carvey's
interesting. Well, this actually brings up a subject which I think we'll all converse about. You know, how much influence Saturday Night Live has had on modern comedy.
Whoa.
How many performers have come through Saturday Night Live, starting way back with John Belushi and Chevy Chase?
Bill Murray.
I mean, Saturday Night Live, thanks to Lorne Michaels, has been a proving ground for comedy for 60 years. I mean, my goodness.
You didn't even have those three with the original. You also had Gilda Radner, who was an amazing comedian.
And Jane Curtin.
Exactly. And Lorraine Newman.
Yep.
You had, and Danny Aykroyd. So can't forget that, too.
Right, yeah. And the current grouping, people like Maya Rudolph and Kristen Wiig, who are populating all sorts of comedies all over the place. Billy Crystal was on Saturday Night Live for a while, I think briefly.
Eddie Murphy, Joe Piscopo. Eddie,
exactly.
Dana Carvey, you know, you had.
Mike Myers.
Exactly.
Mike Myers.
Adam Sandler.
Arthur Friedman,
were you on Saturday Night Live?
No, and Adam Sandler, terrific guy. What a great guy Adam Sandler is. Is he funny? I don't know. Anyway, let's talk about.
He's very funny. Have you ever heard him do the Hanukkah song?
Yeah, I've heard him do the Hanukkah song, and we all have. All right, let's talk about a guy who's funny just to look at, Marty Feldman. Marty Feldman, Gene Wilder, Young Frankenstein, to me the funniest movie I've ever seen, and there's no second place to it. I don't know where to go with it. The outtakes, we've mentioned this before, the outtakes of Young Frankenstein may be the funniest movie ever made, just the outtakes.
You know, Steve had mentioned a lot of these folks who you don't expect to become in comic movies, but we kind of remember Joe Pesci in My Cousin Vinny.
Oh, God, great.
One of the funniest things I've ever seen. And oh, look at the Fockers with De Niro, and analyze this with De Niro. These are not people you expect to be in comic movies, and they're terrific.
Well, it's interesting. Great actors, yeah.
It's interesting because on my other podcast last month, I had one of the writer-directors of the Airplane movie.
Oh.
And he was telling me that when they cast the straight parts, you know, in the movie Airplane, they cast people like Leslie Nielsen and Robert Stack and Peter Graves.
Lloyd Bridges.
And the studio said, no, you don't cast people like that. We want comedians. And they just stood their ground. And they said that there's no way we're casting comic actors. And what happened? Leslie Nielsen became a leading comedy man in so many movies after that.
Naked Gun. True.
Naked Gun, exactly.
I saw Leslie Nielsen in a movie from the 1950s, not long ago on television. I forget what it was. Was he with Sandra Dee or something? Was he in, it was some kind of an important movie, but he was absolutely recognizable. Guys, we can't have a conversation about comedians without mentioning Joan Rivers. She was definitely, again, an original. There were comedians before her. There was a nice lady named Jean Carroll who was very funny. There was Toadie Fields who was very funny. Joan Rivers carved a whole new niche. She was great. We all agree with that?
Oh, yeah, she was. You have to remember going back to early television and early movies was Martha Ray. There was a woman named Judy Canova. There were a lot of people, but... I would say that Joan Rivers in a nightclub as stand-up was as good as anyone I've ever seen, ever.
She was also good, very good on the red carpet with her daughter. They would do these award shows, and Joan made light of it. Very, very funny stuff.
Steve, you're right. She carved a niche. She became the queen of what that was, and her daughter Melissa was great with her. There's a guy that we've left out of this, and I'm telling you, he's very, very funny. I think he was on Saturday Night Live, but he was terrific in movies as well. But a very funny guy, Mike Myers. Milton Berle told me that if anybody was to play him in a life story, it would be either him, Mike Myers, or Jeff Goldblum. Think about that for a second.
It was about a 6-foot difference.
Yeah, size-wise. Chris Rock. Today, as funny as you can get. I mean, there are these guys today who are just brilliant. Jerry Seinfeld is, you know, doing, what would you say, Julian? Seinfeld, a cross between Mort Saul and who? But he's in that world, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. He really takes on the social, real weird stuff of our society and holds a mirror up to it. And it's really funny. It's real. He's very, very, very good.
Who are these people?
I like
that was good. Hey, wait a minute. That was very good. I can see.
I like that when Elaine, Judah Louis asks him on the show, she says, oh, some of these people. He says, people, they're the worst.
Steve, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. I was just saying Seinfeld was a very interesting show. When it first came on the air, it was on life support. Nobody was really watching it. I think it was called originally the Seinfeld Chronicles. And there was just something about these crazy people that we'd never seen before. We didn't know Julia Louis-Dreyfus from A Hole in the Wall, Jason Alexander.
By the way, Saturday Night Live alumni.
There you go. Louis. Michael Richards. I mean, I just have to say that, like you say, Julian, a true test of a comedy movie is if you want to see it again, or a comedy Broadway show, do you want to see it again? And Seinfeld just plays and plays and plays, and it's just funny. And I think
if you want to talk about Seinfeld, please don't leave out Larry David, because Larry David is key to the entire concept.
I find him... insufferable as a performer, but I think that's part of his allure. I mean, people love to see him. There's something in comedy called cringe comedy, where it's just so awful, but you're happy it's happening to someone else. I'm not a big fan of cringe comedy, but he seems to revel in it.
We were having lunch at the Cheesecake Factory in Brentwood one afternoon, me and a couple of friends, in the bar area on these round tables. And there was big commotion on the other side of where we were. It was Larry David eating with his family. And when the waitress came over to see us, I said, what's going on over there? She said, well, he's driving us crazy. He wants rye toast that's not too well done. He wants butter, but not margarine. He wants that's who he is in many ways. Yeah,
and if you watch the Seinfeld show, the Jason Alexander character, George Costanza, is Larry David. I mean, by Larry David's admission, this guy who's a real terrific pain in the ass.
That's who he was. That was his character. Let us not leave out Eugene Levy. Let us not leave out Chris Guest or the Waiting for Guffman group. All of them. Michael McKean, is that his name, I believe?
Yep, that's his name. And this is Spinal Tap. It doesn't get funnier than
Rob Reiner and those guys. My Lord.
Going back to Woody Allen, who was the heir to the Woody Allen kind of film character? And I have to point out to Charles Grodin as one of my favorites. I know, Julian, you were very close with Charles. Charles obviously started his career doing some very dramatic things like Rosemary's Baby. But then he did The Heartbreak Kid. And has there ever been a drier funny man than Charles in that movie?
And if you want to see a really funny movie with Robert De Niro and Charles Grodin, you watch Midnight Run.
Yeah.
And that is really funny. I want to say, Arthur brought up Canada. Let's not forget England. Let's not forget Monty Python. And let's not forget Monty Python and the Holy Grail, which could be one of the funniest movies I've ever seen in my life. And they were great. But, you know, you also had, when we were kids growing up, Peter Sellers in movies and Terry Thomas. And when Peter Sellers and Terry Thomas were together, look out. I mean, that was terrific. I don't know if it's an age factor with me, but it's very hard for me to think of, since 2000, meaning 23 years, any great comic movies that have been made. I'm sure there have been. I'm just forgetting them or I haven't seen them, but I can name 20 that I loved before 2000, but I can't name too many now. So anybody got a couple of good ones in the last 20 years?
Yes, I do. And I will say also that comedy movies have gone through a transformation. There's a fear that you're going to insult somebody. And as you know now, it's impossible to insult anybody, any group now. You have to be very careful who you poke fun at, which, of course, has put a damper on comedians and their funnies.
Steve, what would be a great comedy in the last 20 years, like Julian said?
Well, if you walk down the street and ask somebody the last time they walked into a movie theater and saw a great comedy, it's going to be a while ago. I watched one last night it's now 10 years old, from 2013. It's with some real funny men, Seth Rogen. Seth Rogen is in it. James Franco's in it. It's called This Is the End. It's what you call a raunchy comedy. It's about the apocalypse, the rapture, and I have to tell you, it's laugh out loud funny. And
but you're suggesting that Seth Rogen is funny?
I think Seth Rogen is very funny, and I think he's very funny in the right movie. And this is definitely the right movie. It goes way over the top, and that's another thing about comedy today. You mentioned Buddy Hackett when he does his blue stuff. When movies get raunchy, they get really raunchy. And it was explained to me once by a studio executive, is that the reason the studios release really raunchy comedies like The Hangover, going back to the Porky's movies, whatever, is that they create noise and water cooler chatter. People talk about these outrageous moments in Porky's. Now, this goes back to 1982, and we've talked a little bit about this because I worked on the sequel as the PR guy down in Florida. But these movies, people talk about them. They get a lot of attention. So the idea of a raunchy comedy has become a thing.
The reason that they make and release movies like American Pie and Porky's and anything along the lines that appeals to teenagers is because it appeals to teenagers. Teenagers are the most lucrative demographic you can hit. You can also hit teenage, whether guys or girls. Barbie is kind of proof of that, although it crossed over. But it started really, the impact was with teenagers. Teenagers, nothing like teenagers for a movie. And so American Pie, as an example, you know, blasted off with that. Another guy who we shouldn't leave out really, again, is Eugene Levy, who is hysterically funny. You guys ever see Best in Show? Now, that yes. wasn't 20 years ago, but Best in Show. There's a little guy in there, too, by the way, who's a very, very funny guy, Larry Miller. Who's not as known as so many. He was also in Pretty Woman. But Larry Miller in Best in Show, I've always believed, as I think I've mentioned before, that it's hard to get a movie wall-to-wall that's funny. But there's always these classic scenes in really funny movies, and Best in Show has one of those top 10 funniest scenes of all time when with Larry Miller, Eugene Levy, Catherine O'Hara interacting. The kid goes up to the roof with the dog. And if you see the movie, you'll always remember it for that scene. A
couple other movies I want to talk to you guys about that did come out in the last 20 years that were hysterical. One of them, of course, is Sacha Baron Cohen's Borat.
Yes.
Was, you know, something that you've never seen before. Was very original. You had similar things back in like the 1960s, like with like Jose Jimenez and stuff like that. But it's the fish out of water type situation. And that's what, you know, Sasha was trying to go for with the Borat character. He was trying to play it, you know, comedic with people around him who were not realizing that this was a comedy that they were filming in area.
There was also a fish called Wanda.
Oh, yeah. Fish Called Wanda, but that's older than 20 years.
And also that's the our boys again, Cleese and Michael Palin, at least two, and Kevin Kline.
Kevin Kline,
funnier.
Oh, yeah.
Disappointed.
Very disappointed. That's such a wonderful movie. But you also had a couple of movies throughout the last couple of years. You had like stuff like Napoleon Dynamite, which was very funny. And then you have the Coen brothers movies, which are, you know, mixes of either some comedy and drama, some thriller. It depends what they did. Big Lebowski is considered a comedy. Raising Arizona, A Serious Man, you know, movies like that. And
Burn After Reading, was it? Was that
yes.
Burn After Reading?
Burn After Reading.
Which was really a funny movie.
Right. And then you also had the Steve Carell movie, 40-Year-Old Virgin. Which, you know, made him a star, pretty much.
Funny premise, yeah.
And because before that, he was a correspondent on the Daily Show with Jon Stewart. And Jon Stewart is another funny individual.
Jon Stewart's a giant. I'd like to return for a second to the stand-up comedians. And I will put up a guy who a lot of people haven't heard of, but anybody who has will absolutely agree with me. If you've ever seen John Panette in person, 400 pounds of him. We knew John very, very well. We were involved with John. And I will tell you, pound for pound, no pun intended, he's as funny as anybody that ever lived on a stage. If you doubt it, anybody, tune him into YouTube and just go to John Panette and you'll see what I mean. He unfortunately passed away at the age of 50. John was just plain funny. Don Rickles, who emceed the Comedian of the Year Awards in 1992, I believe it was, at Lake Tahoe, grabbed me after the show and said, this kid is really funny. I mean, he's really funny. We were managing John at the time. He said, but, you know, he's got to lose weight. Otherwise, he'll hit a home run and he won't be able to round the bases, word for word. We tried. We brought John into Pritikin and, you know, he was only interested in going to Italian food or something, but John had a line where they put him on a liquid diet for a week at 400 pounds. And he said he was dying through it, just dying. And there was a knock on his door and he opened the door and there stood before him a Girl Scout cookie girl selling Girl Scout cookies. And he looked at her and said, I think you're going to win the trip to Washington this year. So, John, listen, everybody, whoever's listening to this, if you've never seen him, YouTube, John Panette, P-I-N-E-T-T-E. He would be one of the funniest people that ever lived
And he's in the last show of the Seinfeld series.
Yes, he's in the last show of the Seinfeld series. That's right.
Speaking of large comedians, you have to have a conversation. You have to enter the conversation with John Candy, another large
comedian.
Absolutely. Yeah. And Jackie Leonard.
And Jackie Gleason.
And Chris Farley.
Julian, didn't you want to, who was the guy who said, was it Steve Allen who did the thing, Lenny Jackie?
Yes, it was Lenny. Yes. John Biner played Lenny Jackie. One of the funniest comic sketches you ever want to see.
In those days, every comedian was named either Lenny or Jackie.
Oh, Jackie. That was right. So he came Lenny Jackie. I'll answer my own question. There was a movie that I found very funny in the last 23 years, and that's with this very funny guy for me, Jack Black, and the movie School of Rock, which I thought was terrific. So I think I answered my own question. At least I found one movie that I did like. Oh, I liked the Grand Budapest Hotel, too. I thought that was very clever, very different, and funny.
Do you guys remember a movie called Tropic Thunder?
Yes.
Yeah, sure. With, the takeoff on all the whole action-adventure movies. Yeah.
Ben Stiller has become another successor of the Charles Grodin, Woody Allen school of the oppressed person going through travail. I love Ben in, certainly he was terrific in Tropic Thunder, but I also loved him in the three movies. Night at the Museum, where all the characters come to life in the museum. Very entertaining, funny, a family comedy. And I would argue that the one side of comedy that has disappeared from the movies almost completely is the family comedy. Very rarely, maybe around Christmas, you get a couple of them. But during the year, it's all raunch and more raunch.
How about Something About Mary along those lines?
There you go.
Very successful movie, but we have not mentioned the most famous comedian of them all, who the old joke was with Bob Hope, that he lived and died with his writers. He had the best writers, comedy writers, and he always depended upon cue cards. And it was said about Bob Hope that he used cue cards on his honeymoon night. Yeah. That's how he was used to cue cards. You know, again, stand-up comedians, there's so many of them today, and a lot of them really just aren't funny, and a lot of them are very, you know, just do curse a lot and what have you. But, you know, the old-time great comedians, people like Myron Cohn, they were storytellers. Danny Thomas, they weren't one-line joke things. They were stories. They were masters at it. And as I mentioned, Danny Thomas, there were comedians, Myron Cohn, Jackie Miles. There was a gentleman named Alan Gale. And they would regale you with these stories that perhaps took 3 or 4 minutes to tell. But it was the way they told it. They were artistes.
Alan King.
Alan King was a master. Yeah. Absolutely. They're not here anymore. We don't see that. We don't see that in any form. As I say, Billy Crystal is probably the only one. Billy Crystal's a great, great, funny, funny guy, very talented. But he's probably the last of that school. So today you have so many young guys and girls who go into it, and many of them are funny. It's just not what we knew as humor from years ago with the masters. And the masters, again, you know, we think of Buddy Hackett as a great comedian. Buddy Hackett could tell a story as well as anybody could tell a story. And they were hysterically funny. Again, you reference him on YouTube. You'll see the classic world. Watch him in Atlantic City and watch the audience falling down laughing.
Another guy who got kind of in trouble but has a very funny stand-up act is Louis C.K.
Yeah.
He fills audiences. And then The latest guy I've been hearing a lot about, I haven't really seen a stand-up act, but he has a TV series on HBO now called Bookie. It's called Sebastian Maniscalco.
Yes, he's funny. But he's funny.
Yeah.
We have to remember the other storytellers that we grew up with, like Bob Newhart. and Shelley Berman.
Fantastic.
and Red Fox. These were really, really quite funny and quite different. And of course, Red Fox was as blue as Buddy Hackett. It's amazing when you kind of do the show as we've done and to realize how many huge names were in comedy.
Well, it spawned some great actors too. There was so many of these great comedians were great actors. As an example, Danny Kaye, a terrific actor. He was really one of a kind. Danny Kaye was a brilliant comedian, actor, song and dance man. I mean, he was a total talent. Who's that?
Philanthropist. I mean, he was very involved with children's charities all over the world.
Yes,
UNICEF, et cetera, et cetera. Absolutely. Absolutely. I always loved him in the movie that Ben Stiller would later do, the remake of The Secret Life of Walter Mitty. He was born to play that role.
Great movie. Great movie. Let's not underestimate not so much Jerry Lewis, but Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis. That combination was as entertaining as anything. From the late 1940s, 1950s into the, I guess they folded in about 1956 or 57. But the unit of Martin Lewis was totally special, as big a star as could ever be. And Jerry Lewis was doing something that people were trying to do for years and years, but he found the magic and it worked. Slapstick comedy, you know.
Well, he did a couple of things. And he had a wonderful statement, Jerry Lewis, and his statement was, "It's not so unusual for a comedian to become an actor, but it is quite unusual for an actor to become a comedian." And that was true. Remember, Jerry Lewis is the first person to invent the idea of putting a camera on top of the camera so you could immediately see the rushes. You didn't have to wait a day. You could watch it on the monitor. That was Jerry Lewis's invention.
Yeah.
His idea.
Video assist.
Yeah.
Video
now,
assist.
He certainly wouldn't win the most popular person award as a human being, but he certainly had great talent.
It reminds me of
a line that Walter Winchell wrote in his column about someone that Arthur knew very well, Bobby Darin, when he said, Will Rogers, Winchell's quoting, "Will Rogers never met a man he didn't like, but he never met Bobby Darin."
So, well, that's not very nice.
No, it wasn't. But I think we could substitute maybe Jerry Lewis. But that's not very nice either.
Bobby Darin had a great quote. He was doing a movie with Steve McQueen called Hell is for Heroes.
Yep.
And somebody said to Darin, you know, McQueen's his own worst enemy. And Darin says, well, he hasn't met me yet.
They were terrific together in that movie. I want to mention a couple of actors who I would not consider them comedians per se, but whenever they play comedy, they're very funny. Owen Wilson.
Oh, yeah.
The blonde-haired actor who played kind
Loved of... Loved him in Forget Paris. Gee, he's great. Woody Allen.
Yeah. Well, Midnight in Paris.
Midnight. I love that movie.
Midnight in Paris. And basically, Owen was playing Woody. That Woody didn't play, was too old to play the lead, so he put Owen in that. And he was great. He was great. Another actor who really has done a lot of comedy, and now he's a superhero, is Paul Rudd. Paul Rudd.
Very likable, yeah. These are likable guys, Steve. I'm not so sure they're great comedians, but they have great likability. I want to go back for a second to Walter Winchell, who was probably as big a prick that ever lived by the standards of anybody who was around in those days. And when you mentioned him with regard to Darin, not so much that I love Bobby Darin, which I do and did, who just, by the way, had the 50th anniversary on December 20 of the day he passed away, 50 years on the 20th of December. Bobby Darin opened at the Copacabana in 1960, June, and was the hottest star in show business at that point because of Mac the Knife. He was as hot as Elvis Presley, as Frank Sinatra. He exploded after having several hit records. Walter Winchell was at the end of his career of power. At the absolute end, it was over. He was done, except he was still around. And he went into the Copacabana to see Darren opening, and he jumped on Bobby Darin's bandwagon and got about another 2 years out of his career because he started every day. He would go to the show every night to see Darren, and he would just go crazy and tell everybody how, you know, in those days, the power of gossip journalism was huge. Luella Parsons, Hedda Hopper, Walter Winchell was the biggest of all. But he extended his career by about 2 years because he fell in love with Bobby Darin. So I don't really quite get what that
kind of why
was.
He put that kind of a line in. Maybe that was before he got to know him. But yeah. I would say that of all the people I've ever seen in a nightclub, Sammy Davis Jr. and Bobby Darin were two of the greatest because they could do almost anything.
Couldn't agree more.
They could play mute. They could play the many, many, many instruments. They could be great mimics, both of them, great mimics. They were just terrific. And it's great when you were able to see that. Arthur, you had a great experience. We haven't mentioned the guy we all love, Jimmy Durante.
Oh.
And you had a great experience watching him.
Jimmy Durante was unique. My Lord. I've seen a lot of great nightclub acts. But in Boston, the nightclub, in the days of the 40s and 50s and into the 60s, there were key nightclubs in every major city. In L.A., as an example, Steve, you probably know, they had the Coconut Grove at the Ambassador Hotel. They had Cyril's, they had Macomba. They had a lot of great clubs. New York, Copacabana, Latin Quarter. Every city had it. Philadelphia Town Casino outside of Philly. In Boston, it was Blinstrup's. And I'm telling you, I've seen a lot of great nightclubs, but Blinstrup was a gymnasium. It was basically the YMCA. The only missing was the track above head. You know, it was like a dump, but it was great. And, you know, they'd have all the big acts who would come to Boston would play Blinstrup's. Went to see Jimmy Durante, and it was like a sporting event. The audience loved him so much, they were cheering as he was singing. They were standing and cheering. You thought you were at the Boston Celtic basketball game. Yeah. Jimmy Durante in person with Eddie Jackson, who he brought out just to do the strut number, which was totally unique and great, was as great a nightclub act as I've ever seen. Talk about likability. But again, he was totally unique. He could sing, but he couldn't sing. He was great singing with his voice, you know. He was funny. He was energetic. It was really a show. Now, again, who is that today? There is no Jimmy Durante today. There probably never will be.
No. I'll tell a quick story. I met Marge Durante, his wife, and they wanted to adopt a child. And they went before a judge who said, "My God," he said, "you people are in your 60s. How can I give this to a child?" But he paused and he looked at Durante and he said, "Fairy tales can come true. It can happen to you." And
nice.
they gave him the child. Now, we should point out for the younger listeners that Durante also had recorded the Sinatra song, Young at Heart. So he was not only quoting the song, but it was also, at that point, a hit by Jimmy Durante.
He absolutely found a whole other path to success, if you could have as big as he was, by singing the great standard songs, which is basically talk singing, but his voice was, again, unique. And if you see Sleepless in Seattle, make someone happy, make just someone at the end. Durante was, again, you don't have, that's not happening, guys.
No.
That kind of talent is different. Now, I want to add something to the Darin thing in a nightclub with Sammy Davis. Sammy Davis said that the only act in show business he would never follow would be Bobby Darin. So Julian's right. They're both very unique. But if you ever saw Frank Sinatra in Vegas, you understand that this guy had so much charisma, and he was so great. He was really the greatest pop singer of all time, that he literally just walked out on the stage and it was over. He had the audience. He didn't have to open his mouth. He just picked up the microphone, took a sip on his drink, and again, there, Dean Martin, same thing in a way. Nothing as great as Sinatra.
We're coming to the end of our show, guys. Another great, just a panorama of Laughmeisters on male, female, just fabulous guys. And those of you who are listening today, if you want to learn more about our show, you can email us at talesfromhollywoodland@gmail.com. We love to have people tell us their ideas for shows and what you're thinking of our shows, please don't hesitate to give us a review. And then we're available all over the platforms. You can get us on Spotify and Amazon and Apple, and where good podcasts are presented. And we love just hearing from you guys. And anyways, as always, great listening to you, you guys. And we certainly presented a lot of comics today.
We have one last line, Steve, and that is from a very wise man. The one last line is, the journey of 1,000 miles begins with a broken fan belt and a leaky tire. Always remember those words.
Thanks, guys.
Have a good night.
Pardon the interruption. We'll bring you back to your podcast in just a moment. But first, promo for the Cosmic Pizza Podcast.
In the Cosmic Pizza Podcast, your pizza delivery guys, Dan, Sean, and Paul, serve you a slice of life.
As we discuss literally anything in the universe.
Conspiracy theories?
Movies that we've liked. Women in comedy, voice actors, film directors and producers, authors. But what we don't talk about is pizzas.
Wednesday, I'm here with you people. It's wild.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping at the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.